Hi, welcome to the podcast. Today, it's going to see Pam Eve. It'll be the first time in 3 months, and I am up a dosage on my new medication. I need to get to Pam. It's good to have you here. Just a couple of things to touch on. I missed this late last week, but the chicanes, these road-narrowing objects that were on Whitechapel here in South Toledo on the road that I think cuts from Detroit to Bern. So they're gone now, and I had been to a couple of traffic meetings, and people did not like them. And I think it simply came down to there's a lot of, and this is prevalent in so many places, people just don't like new things, regardless of how much hard data you give people. And I do think that the city was not being misleading with the data. People just don't like new things. We're all going to get to an age or a point in our life where we're not going to like something that's new. So the chicanes are gone, but the city said it has, and I only bring this up because these people were very feisty in South Toledo. There was a standalone traffic meeting for just this one area for residents to chime in. The city says that it did as expected. It reduced speeds. I'm sure they have the data, and they're not just saying that. People in the neighborhood say they still see people going 50 miles an hour. That's never going to stop. Even if someone has to squeeze their car down a narrow, tight alley, somebody is going to drive recklessly. But the people didn't want it. The city listened, and we'll see what happens now. Whether it is less safe, but the people are happy, or the word got out there that you better slow down in this neighborhood. So sidewalks will be built there instead. And I throw this out just to remind all of us, to give us the awareness that there will be a point in time in all of our lives, whether you're 23, 43, 63, 83, no matter how young or how old you are, especially when you're older, something will come along and you will have a get off my lawn moment. You will just not like something because it's new, no matter how good it's relayed to you that it is. The tin can is officially closed. That word is out there now. When I was downtown for opening day, I saw it was not open, was not surprised. That place has a checkered history and a lousy reputation. And I just will leave it at that. And there was enough out there that these were not just rumors and reckless speculation. So the official word was something with the lease ended, they just moved. There was also something in on WTOL.com today about when they opened in, 2017 or 19, some other places like the alleyway weren't there, so there's more competition. So basically, you're conceding to the competition if this is taken at face value. You're saying these places did a better job than we did. Or perhaps people may have just felt better at some of these other locations. There is the potential for it to be a family-friendly eatery. I don't know what that entails. Unless you're going to go like all out Playland and games and think almost like a Chuck E. Cheese kind of place or Major Magic's. You're intimating, and maybe I'm just reading too much into this, and maybe it's just all wordplay to avoid the issue that I have not directly said. There are plenty of family-friendly places downtown. There are families at Dirty Bird, Blarney, all the bars and restaurants, especially Paco's. Paco's is completely family-friendly. Kids love hot dogs. I don't know if another eatery, not all of these eateries are going to work. As you've heard me say on this multiple times, some of these bar restaurants are not going to work. And I know places often open and close. Connect Toledo was involved in this story. So I hope, as I often say, I hope one of two things happen. Whoever is opening what downtown, I hope they invest in market research, which can be very expensive, to find out whether or not what you want to do, what your idea is, actually has a chance of success. Or kind of like the people saying people are still racing around these streets, even with those things. Nobody's slowed down, or it's just, you know, what's the way to put this? I don't know if there's like a eyewitnesses are not often that helpful. You're using the eye. You're going to go in the eye test and gut instinct. And a lot of times your instinct is a collection of data from experiences over years. But unless you can put it down in hard numbers for me, you're going to have a hard time persuading me. So get the hard numbers to see if you think your idea, you have an idea and you think you're going to fill a hole. You're going to do it differently from these other places. Maybe they're not doing it that way because it's not going to work. So get the data, get the information. I believe one of the things Connect Toledo does is offer that guidance. Maybe not the hard market research data, but hopefully they did say, whenever something closes, we look at it as an opportunity. Sure, I hope you guide the right venture into that opportunity rather than setting someone else up for failure. Just because one thing closes and another thing opens doesn't mean it's going to work. To that point, as you've heard me say, I don't know if any more coffee places are going to work downtown. The number I heard being kicked around in the post-COVID era was there's like 90-some eateries in downtown. So you can get food. And a lot of those places you can get drinks at. Not all of them are going to work for one reason or another, whether it's location or quality of service or quality of meal and drinks. They're not all going to work. At this point, and I know there is data that says there's just not enough for a place like this to be down there right now. You know what? It is probably a better risk to open a small grocery store than it is to open another bar restaurant. You will delight many of the residents, if not all of the residents in downtown Toledo, who can go grab some grocery items, can get a box of pasta, can get some things that they can't get at the gas stations or have to drive up to Market on the Green for, which that's uptown. You might have heard me say I've had this since the minute the Market on the Green opened. And I thought ProMedica should do it. They obviously don't have the financial resources to necessarily do it now. They should have copy and pasted the Market on the Green in places all over the city where they are needed, where they could be used. Put it right next to in the food deserts where the Dollar Generals and Family Dollars plop down and sell people lots of junk food. A Market on the Green could work, or just a small version of that. To me, if I did not have the information and the data in front of me, but you had to have me gamble on something, I would open a small grocery store rather than another bar restaurant in downtown. Back to my self-checkout tirade against the people who hate it. There's a story that I shared this weekend. The Walmart store in Place in Missouri began removing self-checkout lanes. They'll all be gone in a couple of weeks. This is two ways I'm glad somebody opened my eyes to this. I thought it was because people don't want to do their own work. They don't want to work when they're shopping. They want someone else to tend to them. But a friend mentioned when I posted this that, no, it's probably because plenty of people are stealing, especially at Walmart, or maybe the eyes aren't on customers as much as they are some other places. I know I'm more watched at Target, more engaged by somebody at the self-checkouts than I am at the Walmart, where there's one person, they're overwhelmed, they might be looking at their phone. So I get it. People are walking out with stuff, and it got to the point where they're losing merchandise, and it's not because people demand to be waited on. And actually, those people who are stealing are now going, would potentially steal my time, which if I chose to do this, I will now have to wait in line to be checked out. Because as Chad said on this post quite astutely, these are not taking jobs from people. Walmart and the like are not going to stop doing self-checkouts and hire more people. In fact, when there were less people ringing customers out, it allowed them to do things like get things stocked more quickly. Maybe more importantly, do more customer service things, returns and whatnot, which are more frequent. And more than anything, something that I don't use because I like walking around the store, I don't have to drag kids around with me. Those people that used to check you out, They can now be allocated to grab your stuff and deliver it out to your car so you can sit in your car with your kids. That might be a little slower in some places that are asked or required in some way to get rid of self-checkout. So just remember, I love Target. It's a store I'm at often. I think the same thing is applicable to them. I don't see them hiring more people if self-checkout goes away. The other thing is, as I mentioned, with the waiting in lines, they're not going to pay. I'll use Christine. Christine is probably not going to check me out any faster because she knows it's important to the cause and the job, and she's not going to get paid more. So she will check people out as much as she can. So we will all just wait in that line as Christine goes about her item after item, getting people through the register. You're going to say, well, they should pay these people more money. Sure, maybe they'll work a little harder. Maybe they're not getting paid enough now. And if you throw them an extra $2 or $3, they will zoom through that long line of people that are waiting to get checked out. Maybe. But you know what? As I've said all along for the last couple of years, some way it's going to come back on us. It's going to come back on the consumer. I was just talking with a friend here. So I'm going through the car buying version of what you have been through, what Alex was through, going through with homes. This is the most challenging it's ever been for me to buy a car or to get a new vehicle. I have 4 months left on my lease. Arguably the best solution, there's one tongue-in-cheek solution, which is move farther away from work. Not a 4 mile ride. The more pragmatic way I should go about it is get like a 2008 Accord and for like a couple thousand bucks and just drive that. That's the pragmatic way of going about it, because I have had my vehicle now 14, 15 months and I've put 7,500 miles on it, and 1,000 of that is going to and from Philadelphia. I was talking to my friend here at work and we were talking about car insurance. I need to add car insurance onto whatever this vehicle might cost me. And we were talking about how it's gone up so much. I think it was, I remember the sigh and the feeling I had of relief when I moved from Michigan in the end of 2012 to here, 2013. I think I was paying like $900 every 6 months. I pay it all out to save a couple of bucks. I think when I got here, I don't know if my insurance was $300 for 6 months. I think it was in the high twos. Now it's like $450. It crept up before all the COVID stuff, but a couple of weeks ago, I was talking to my brother. You might not know, I closed my garage door too soon on my car and crushed the satellite antenna. It was a very careless $1,000 mistake. That's not why I'm getting a new car. And I said to my brother, I was like, how much does they gave me the estimate for the parts. And I asked Paul, I was like, how much? They said it's going to take like an hour and a half for service, for the manpower to get the work done. I was like, what's that cost? What do they charge, like 50, 70 bucks, 75 bucks an hour? He's like, no, it's like 150 or 200. So many people are getting paid more. And as I have said from the outset, companies aren't going, you know what? We'll just make a little bit less money. We'll make a little bit less profit. Even if they are altruistic and caring, they are not giving up profits or revenue. They just push it back on to us. There were a record amount of watchers of the WNBA draft the other night. It should be pretty obvious why. It goes with Caitlin Clark, who has truly been a comet, a shooting star, and I hope something else. I won't get too nerdy with this, but if I ask you to think of the NBA and the beginning of your knowledge of it and when it got popular, maybe it's just Steph Curry. For me and for a lot of people, in fact, the league became what it was back in the early 80s after a very dark era. Now, I've never read much about this, but I know about it from listening to whoever I've listened to and followed over the years. So in the 70s, the NBA was in a bad place. Like, it was a drug-ridden league, and I believe the other common thing associated with it was either regular season games or maybe even playoff games were played tape delay, not live, tape delay late at night and incredibly hard to find. So then the commissioner was David Stern, and the league lucked into having Magic versus Bird, two likable superstars who formed this rivalry in the early 80s. And then things got even that much better a couple of years later when the greatest player, you want to have this argument, the greatest player ever arrived in the league. And that was, this was all the backbone, the lodestar that became the foundation of what the NBA is now. I hope Caitlin Clark is just that for the WNBA. As I said, maybe sloppily a couple of weeks ago, hopefully the people that followed her will continue to follow her in the WNBA. Maybe not college basketball, but in the WNBA. And again, I'll try to polish this up from a couple of weeks ago. When you think about women's sports, it's not 2007. It's not so much slower, low to the ground, less physical than what we're accustomed to seeing watching men play sports. They will never be what, there will never be a LeBron James. If you put the best women's team against like the worst men's team in the NBA, like best WNBA team, all-stars against the worst NBA team, the NBA team might whoop their ass. Maybe not all the time, but most of the time. It's like the best college football team could never beat the worst NFL team because, and even I had to learn this, because on the worst NFL team, they're all NFL players. On the best college team, there's only like 5 or 10 NFL players. But that doesn't mean that the women's product cannot be watched, where you turn it on in 2007 or 2003 when the league just got going and the shooting prowess wasn't what it was. It was like you were watching it in slow motion. It's not like that anymore. And people found that out when they tuned in for Caitlin Clark. And again, it's a lot of the ratings for the women's tournament and for the WNBA is because similar to we're all going to have that old moment in our life where we just don't like it because it's new. Most of us like what we know. We're comfortable with it. We know women's college basketball players. They have not hopped around from team to team as much. So you get a couple of years to know Dawn Staley because the coach of South Carolina, because she's a personality, has historic numbers, was a great player herself. And South Carolina kept getting deep into the tournament. You saw her on your TV a lot. Same thing with Angel Reese. Same thing with Caitlin Clark and several other stars. In men's college basketball, the coaches, if you know them at all, are the stars because the players hop around so much. That's from school to school. They also hop from being in high school 1 year, playing college, going to the NBA. We like what we know, and we have come to know Caitlin Clark extremely well. And I hope people continue to tune in for her journey as maybe the best women's player ever. Maybe she is not only their Michael Jordan off the court and bringing eyeballs, but perhaps on the court. Although I did read some quotes from like Diana Taurasi and Elena Deladon, great WNBA players. And like they asked for their welcome to the WNBA moment, and Caitlin Clark will have hers. She'll have to adjust and then continue on, perhaps to lots and lots of greatness. And again, I can't underline this enough. Networks are desperate for live sports, even if it was, and this isn't to go, oh, women are just, you know, they're only getting this because they're women. If there was a live event people were interested in, if you had cats playing pickleball and people were interested in it and it was DVR or on-demand proof, they'd put it on. So I think Caitlin Clark has more nationally televised games next season than the champions of the last WNBA season. So as I've said, it is not going to be hard to find her on TV when the WNBA season kicks up.